for founders that are listening to this, I mean, you know, Abe gave me great advice when I was first starting this. He was like, you're going to talk to 100 people and 99 of them are going to say no.
Yep.
But you only need one to say yes. It only takes one to say yes. And that's with every round, realistically.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Seed Stories. This is your host, John Deshotsky. I'm excited to have Zach from My Place on the show today. Zach, thanks for coming on board.
Yeah, John, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Before we get started, you just have to share with everybody where the shack. Where are you sitting today?
I live in a small bodega that was built in the 1940s on a ranch on a surf break in Todos Santos, Mexico. This is my bodega. There used to be tools in here, and now there's me. And this is the My Place HQ.
That's amazing. We're going to get into the details on everything about My Place, the recent funding announcement, which is all very, very exciting. But you have an incredibly interesting background. You've done a lot of things, you know, everything from a brewery to Burning Man to a bunch of other things. And I want to just kind of hear your story because it's a circuitous path to building a startup, and I want to just get, you know, some of those details.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I mean, it's a great, it's rare you get to do a snapshot of your trajectory and your why. I think from a young age, I grew up in a really traditional Wall Street town. Everyone's family commuted to Wall Street in New Jersey when I was a kid. And as a young age, I was kind of pretty convinced that people who had been very successful in that environment, no one seemed really happy. And I was convinced that there had to be another way to do things, and that I got fascinated by the 60s and the cultural revolution that happened in the 60s. And I was like, you know, I bet because of the internet, something like that happens again, like at scale, and it stays. And I want to be right in the middle of it. And I want to figure out how to like define a new path in life with what we have available to us today that's maybe different than the path I was shown with like the 2.5 kids and the job and the retirement plan and working the way up the ladder. And that led me to get really interested in, I got a degree in interdisciplinary studies, which was kind of like studied the classics of Western civilization, had a health experience in middle of college and discovered Eastern philosophy and yoga and meditation. And I went to a Vipassana, like a 10-day silent meditation retreat when I was 20. And that pushed me to California, where I discovered the Esalen Institute, which is, you know, like Alan Watts and those
guys. Of course.
Guys.
Yeah.
That Alan Watts was like.
But for the viewers and listeners, it's always good to get. Yeah. I want to hear.
Alan Watts was like this great philosopher from the 40s. He came to Stanford in the 40s and got really popular in the 60s and very popular today, even after he's passed. But he's the first person who kind of brought together Eastern and Western philosophy in a way that was palatable for Westerners to understand Taoism and Buddhism and, you know, a lot of what like mainstream, like I call like Instagram yoga spirituality, he brought that to life. Like he brought us the New Age spiritual movement. He was teaching at Esalen, and a lot of people that were foundational in the counterculture movement in the 60s. We're teaching at this place called Esalen, and I moved there when I was 23 after I got out of college. Just started looking at like the world is so different now from the world I inherited from my parents, and we all inherited from our parents. The ability to be connected to people globally, the ability to be exposed to ideas globally, the ability to see Eastern, Western, Middle Eastern, African, South African, ayahuasca, to, you know, technology, to this, all these ideas that we're exposed to without leaving your shack. I think it's radically reformed and reshaped what a life could be and is, and who you're connected to, who are your people. And that course of inquiry has led me on everything. Like, who are my people? Where is my community? What does a life of purpose mean today for me? And how do I live an extraordinary life with the tools that I have access to? So that led me to studying at places like Esalen and learning about Eastern philosophy and diving deep into meditation and working really closely with the founders of Burning Man, because they're prototyping culture there. you know, that's a, for the people who haven't been, obviously it's not a music festival. It's this like prototype of a, of an idea of a culture that's not defined by location or nationality, race, religion, or creed, but like pure human expression.
Yeah. The way that I try to describe that to nobody that, to people that haven't been yet is, do you want to go to a place where when you leave, you become, you fall back in love with humanity all over again?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's
like,
a great way to
like
say
we
it.
Are actually really good. We are actually awesome. We are, we actually do care about each other. We actually are very connected. Like, you, if you don't want that, then I don't, you know, it's like, hard to, what do you want? You know?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different ways that people are finding this out now, and I think it's really cool. You know, nationalism brought about great things in humanity, but it also brought about, with, you know, with everything great comes a great failure as well. And, you know, we see this, these like really intentionally ethnocentric impulses that are existing in the world today that maybe didn't exist in the past. And things like Burning Man and things like meditation retreats and the psychedelic movement that's happening right now and all these things, and even the rise of new religions, like they're helping people come back in touch with their humanity. And, you know, I think the internet is the great enabler of these experiences. And, you know, we've been for a few hundred years now on a journey of globalization. And globalization doesn't mean we're all going to be the same. It means that like we get to experience all the uniqueness of all these different cultures in the world and make up this new worldview that it's all good. It's all okay. We're all, no matter if you're like gay or straight or black or white or bisexual or Muslim or Jewish, like we all have the same wants, needs, and desires. And I think things like Burning Man, things like Esalen, things like these experiences that are things like the internet, you know, the internet is an experience that's new, allow us to see our similarities and be more human together and like fall back in love with humanity each time. And I think, you know, I see it happening. There's wars, there's less now than there was, which is cool. and I really wanted to, you know, my feel like my life's work is to help people feel connected to something outside of their geography or their ethnicity or their like nation, right? Like I have an American passport. I live in Mexico. I split my time in Spain. My friends are all over the world. Everyone's of different ethnic groups. Everyone's of different geographies and everyone's of different sexual preferences and orientations. What am I part of? That's been the course of inquiry for my life. And that's kind of what led me to my place in a circuitous way.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, the way you describe that is this wonderful primordial soup of finding meaning and looking inward. I think a lot of people come away from those types of experiences and get back to a traditional path. And maybe because they don't know what to do with it, but it seems like you had a special spark for you that said, okay, not only did I discover this entire new way of being, more connected globally to people of all different types and places, but I need to now do something with that that's more meaningful and not just experience it as a consumer, right? Experience it and drive it to more people. So I guess, you know, and take this where you want, but I think the germination of the idea for my place is actually, I guess I would say, productizing a little bit of what you had learned. Talk to me a little bit about where that kernel of an idea came from, and sort of like what led you to wanting to create that experience.
Yeah, I could. So first of all, I didn't start this intentionally. Yeah. I made a website to share my house with my friends while I was away traveling because I wanted my house to be used. And it kind of turned into its own thing. But why I chose to really structure it and why my co-founder joined and why a lot of the people on the team have joined is I come from a community of people. We're on the edge of stuff. Like we're figuring new stuff out. We're either stupid or like good risk takers. You know, you never know what it's like, blind stupidity or I actually like intentionally took that risk, but for whatever reason, I wasn't able to take the normal path. And one of the things I was able to do, and a lot of my like extended friend group, which is a huge group of people, we hacked travel. by tapping into social networks. You know, like through Facebook and now WhatsApp and Instagram and all, and it originally started on Facebook. I was able to like find people who I had some connection to all over the world and stay with them. Mm. And then they would show me something and they would buy me lunch and I would stay in their house and it wouldn't cost that much. If I had to actually rent hotel rooms and take the traditional tourist experience, all the travel I've done in my life, there's no way I could have afforded it.
Right.
There's just no way. I was traveling, you know, it's like, oh, you're going to Paris in the summer. Like, I literally can't afford to go to Paris in the summer.
Right.
But if I like stay with a friend and like, then he introduced me to somebody who has a restaurant, you know, and then we have dinner at their house. And it's not only is it a better experience, I have a deeper network. I've met more people and I've saved way of money and I can do it. And then while I'm doing that, someone else is staying in my house. And, you know, it's the greatest gift to experience the world through friends or friends of friends. And we hacked it.
Yeah.
And so our theory and what we're working on now is like, can we give that to everyone?
Right.
Where everyone, no matter who you are, no matter what you look like, and no matter what types of people you're connected to, can you use your network, your friend from high school, your neighbor that you grew up with, and like find the webs of people that would host you or that would, you'd want to get to know people into the same sports teams or into the same, you know, we have a dog sitting group that's growing on a platform right now where people are like, oh, watch my dog when you go here, you know? And
yeah,
that I think with the world the way it is, you know, there's a great quote about the internet that said the internet has made close people far and far people close.
Interesting.
Less people today than 100 years ago are deeply connected to their neighbors, but are super connected to people all over the world.
Yeah.
But it's hard to visualize and it's hard to tap that network. Like, it's easy to walk over to your neighbor's house and ask for coffee. Ask for like, oh, do you have any sugar?
Yeah.
But it's hard to talk to your friend in Paris that you met on the internet one time at a wedding.
Right.
To do anything. So our goal is to help people find their people around the world and actually share with each other.
I love the mission statement and also just the sort of authenticity that rings true in the early days. And, you know, my guess is a company like Airbnb probably wanted to be that way, but it has obviously had its ups and downs, right? As an experience and a product and all that kind of stuff. This is a total tangent, but when I was younger, we did a house swap with a family in Paris for a full summer. And wow. We got their tiny little apartment in Bastille, Rue des Roquettes. And they got our professor's house at Stanford University, where my dad taught, and in Palo Alto. And it was that old school, like, magazine where you could like look up places to move to, and we got like such a local authentic experience. So what you're talking about with my place reminds me a lot more of that than a lot of the tools that have been built today, because we had a whole binder that they had created of like, go to this Crip store because this is Jacques and he knows us and he'll cook you the best Crips, and like,
sure, girl.
All the things that we did were based on what this family had recommended for us. You know what I mean? So like, we just felt so much more, and it was cheap. It was not expensive. We swapped homes and like, you know, we lived off of, you know, local food and friends in the neighborhood. So I love the way that kind of reinvigorates kind of local travel and building real connections to a new community and new experience. I guess, how do you, and this is fast forwarding a little bit, but how do you keep that as part of the experience? Because presumably you want this to become large.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about how you structure a network, and it's all about how you structure a business model. Right. So I'll preface this with like, I'm a super active Airbnb user. Hosted my home on Airbnb. I've traveled the world through Airbnb. I think I got on my first account in 2011. Changed my life. I love it. It's the KPI of Airbnb, the way the business model is set up, is transaction. It's a percent of a transaction fee, right?
Right.
So there's zero incentive for that network in any way to facilitate any type of swapping, sharing, know, if you know the person, you're just going to text them and like do it off platform. So you don't pay 30%.
Right.
So there's no incentive for swapping, sharing, free, or anything that's like that. It incentivizes the highest amount of transactions it can possibly get with the highest dollar amount. So it really pushes towards what it's become, which is a vacation rental marketplace for professional hosts. You know, the average Airbnb host has, I think, 9 listings. Hmm. And like, I think 5% of Airbnb's hosts make up 98% of their revenue.
Hmm.
So there's the days when I was on Airbnb of sharing your spare bedroom with like-minded travelers, which I still have friends from that era.
Yeah.
That's kind of behind us a bit.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that is the case, and you see this all over the internet, there's about 600 of these websites that we found
mm-hmm.
that are like Airbnb for this group or mm-hmm. Airbnb for that group, right? It's, you know, Airbnb is one group and everyone on Airbnb can see everyone else's houses.
Right.
When you look at the numbers, most people aren't comfortable renting their homes to strangers. Most people, I think only 0.4% of Airbnb's users are hosts.
Hmm.
So it's, do you rent your house to strangers when you're not
we
in did, it?
Yeah, we used to, it's a long story, but
a lot of people have that. Right. And so It's like most folks, I think only 30% of all second homes in the world are available for rental on the internet. So 70%. Yeah. 70% of people's second homes just aren't usable. They're there for friends and family. So we set up a world where it's not just one group. Like mm-hmm. we have multiple groups on the platform. You can join the nurses group. You can join the dog sitters group. You can join the swapping group. You can join the Stanford alumni group. It's all about sharing things that you wouldn't rent to strangers mm-hmm. with people that you trust. And we have cost covering and people pay each other money, but there no one's there. No one's joining my place to start a vacation rental business.
Right.
Because it would be a bad idea. If you wanted to start a vacation rental business, you should use Airbnb and Booking.com or VRBO because they just run ads to market to millions of people to get them to stay in your house. We do the opposite. We're like, we have people who share with 10 people.
Yep.
And that's it. And there's 10 friends at each other's houses with each other. No one gets on my place and sees all the houses.
Right. Those details are super fascinating because you've built in that community feel into the product experience, which again is so varied versus what Airbnb has done in or a Sonder or an Avant Stay. And like, there's a lot of opportunities for these kinds of differentiated experiences. And what's even more cool about it is it speaks to you as a founder, which is kind of something I wanted to get back to, which is like, you know, you were doing all these different projects, but what made you, and by the way, you were renting out with friends sort of casually through social media. What made you want to go full time into this and really turn this into a real thing? You know, what was the sort of like, you know, because going from like doing something casually on the side as a side hustle so that you can travel the world and have a fun time is different than running a company.
I realized that everyone does it.
Yeah.
I've always been looking at how do you add the most value in the world? Like, how do I give the most value to people through what I do for work?
Yeah.
Traditionally, like the most valuable thing that most people have to share with other people is their spare bedroom or their house when they're away. Like that experience is such a meaning. You remember this story from like 20 years ago, right? This is a meaningful thing you can do.
Yep.
And I always looked at like the internet is this like growing organism, and wherever it's moving towards, if you can be part of the connective tissue of building the future of the internet, you'll add tons of value to people's lives.
Right.
And so I see like connecting communities around the world to share things with each other is something that will add a ton of value to people's lives. The last thing I want to do is join another social network where someone's going to share more like news with me.
Yeah.
Or like more photos. I don't need more photos. I don't need more news. I don't need more information, right? I need like experiences. I want like stuff. I've met all these people. I've connected with them all over the world. Like, let's do things together. Let's do in real life stuff better. I don't want to build the metaverse. I want to build this verse awesome. And so when we got an article, I had like a few thousand of my friends sharing their houses with each other on the Squarespace page I made. And we got a New York Times article published about us, and a bunch of people, like a bunch of internet strangers, people I've never met, hit the website, and they wrote on the join form, because there was a password wall, and people hit the form. They're like, hey, this is awesome. I want to share my house, but not with your friends. I would like to share my house with my own friends.
Yeah.
And then I got all these messages that were like, oh my God, I totally had this idea. I was going to start this for my friend group. And I was like, oh, this is a social network.
Yeah.
Like, this is
and like some a closed end social network. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you don't join Discord and get invited to all the Discords. Like, you don't join Facebook and have 3.7 billion friends. Like, you join the groups that are interesting to you, and you join the groups that invite you, and you make friends with the people that you meet.
Yeah.
We built a social network that's focused around sharing your house.
Yep.
Or your spare bedroom, or someone put their boat on there. People are putting their cars on. Like, it's a network to share your house with your friends.
Right.
And I think we never got the sharing economy. Like, I was in San Francisco in 2010, and I drank that sharing economy Kool-Aid so hard. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, we could just share everything. We already produced all the stuff. There's enough cars, there's enough boats, there's enough houses, there's enough things.
Right.
And I ended up with a taxi app and a vacation rental website.
Right.
Like, it's 2012, it's 2022. It's 14 years later. It's still no easier for me to share anything with anyone that I know than it was in 2008. I still like post on Facebook.
Yeah. There's nothing sharing about it too. Like when I was building my last company, we talked about this all the time, which is basically like, you can order all these things, but you're alone and you're just by yourself ordering a bunch of crap. You know, and like, you know, what we used to use is our community. Like, hey, can I get a ride, buddy? Like, we don't do that anymore. Yeah. We have a random person Uber. Who doesn't want to talk to us.
There's a great book that was given to me by the founders of Burning Man called The Gift by Lewis Hyde. Mm. And it talks about the different types of exchanges that exist in the world. And there's a market exchange, there's a gifting exchange, and a sharing exchange. Mm. You know, and a market exchange is when, like, I sell you something at a profit. And that profit is designed to, like, cut the personality in the transaction. Like, I got the value I need via the dollars, and, like, you're not a human, I'm not a human. Like, I got the thing I'm buying. You ever go buy something in, like, India or, like, a country that's been around for a long time, you always like haggle and talk prices because you get to know the person and like you engage in like an interesting diet and you're like, you know what? You're cool. Like, you're cheaper and you have a great life experience. Then there's a gifting exchange where if I give you something and you take it, like we have an energetic bond now.
Yeah.
Right. And like, we're more, there's more of us because of that gift. And same with cost covering and sharing.
Right.
Like where like we might, I'm not like profiting off you. I'm like, yeah, like you can use it. I like you. We know each other. These transactions just build different mindsets and cultures.
Yeah.
And I want more connection and more community. And I think through the sharing of things, we can get that. And it's totally different than these like marketplaces. So we view ourselves a little bit more of as a social network than as a marketplace.
Oh, and by the way, you're tapping into what the original hope of the sharing economy was, but the execution may indicate that the intentions might not have ever been there.
I think the intentions were there. Like I've spoken to so many people from early days Airbnb and so many people from early days.
Yeah.
Maybe not Uber. Uber was kind of like a taxi app. You know, but like
Airbnb. And by the way, taking a taxi now is more enjoyable than an Uber. So it's like,
I mean, it's a different kind of tool for different tools. But, you know, you really like, I know that they cared a lot. And we actually had a few people from early Airbnb join our team who were like, oh, we wanted to do this.
Yeah.
But if your KPI is transaction fee, like 30% of all of the exchanges that happened on my place last year were for free or for no money at all. Not even cost covering, not even paying for the cleaners.
Yeah.
With a transaction fee as your KPI, like you can't do that.
Right.
And so we're just making sure we don't do a transaction fee as a KPI. We probably would have had Airbnb not already done it.
I see what you mean. So like basically
you don't know until you scale it. Like you don't know fossil fuels are bad until like everyone uses them every day at a billion people per day. when fossil fuels were invented, people were like, this is the best thing ever.
Right. And brought a lot of people out of poverty as well.
100%. So
I think that, gosh, there's so many directions we could go because you're such a smart and fun guy to talk to. But I want to go back to the Squarespace moment. You're like, oh, shit, everybody's signing up. Oh, my God, this is happening. This is a real thing. What was the next action you took? And, like, how did you turn it from that to the beautiful site that you have now and the product experience you have today? And obviously, that wasn't a short line. So maybe give us a little bit of a time frame. Like, where are we? What year are we in?
I mean, we're currently in like year 2.5 on this thing. Right. We're in year probably 2 of like doing this really seriously. The things that happened, I mean, there's 3 key moments with the company. It's when I met Abe, when Abe Shafi kind of pulled me aside. He's our first investor. He's the founder of a company called IRL, which is a really cool company that a lot of young people are using to meet in real life. and he was like, listen, this is a cool idea. Why don't I write you a blank check and just build this for our friends? Like, I bet, like, even if you lose all the money, this could be cool for our friend group and is worth it for me.
Right.
It was the coolest thing. And I was like, okay, I'll like tinker. And then I called, one of my best friends, Ramit Chabla, who is an amazing technologist, and has built hundreds of apps. And I was like, hey, do you want to build this with me? And he was like, you know what? I've been working on something on my own. It's like a private booking site. Let's do it. And so he joined as my co-founder. And we started kind of working with some of developers in the background. We're like, well, what would this look like? What would it look like if we built this for us, for our friends? And then when the New York Times article came out, there was obviously a lot of growth that happened in that moment. You don't just end up in the New York Times. Like, we noticed a lot of things happening. We had attracted a few investors that were really early days Facebook and really early days PayPal, kind of like the foundational internet folks. And they started showing us how these networks work. And that's, I think, that's led us to where we are today, is to be backed by some of the people who are really foundational in creating some of these networks on the internet. We're still learning how to build networks. It's really hard.
It's very hard. Yeah.
One group is easy. Networks is a whole
crazy
thing. But those are the key moments.
Yeah.
Dave, when we met Dave from Freestyle, I mean, this is a seed story. We met Dave from Freestyle.
Yeah.
I was onboarding users one by one to be like, how do you want to use this thing? And Dave, I put Dave's house in Utah. Dave has a ski house in Utah that he shares. He's empty half the time and he just doesn't want any money for it. He wants to share it with his friends. And I helped him get on the network and start sharing his house with his friends. And he was like, hey, FYI, I'm a venture capitalist and I'm going to send you a term sheet after this call. This is cool. And I was like, oh, I was about
fundraising
to send,
done. Fundraising
I was about
over.
To start sending my investor update out to ask for intros to investors. And he was like, you don't have to. We're done. And that was a really cool sign. Like, I don't know anyone who's raised a seed round like that.
That is wonderful. We back when we were building Star City, we interviewed Stanley from Urbanus, who's now Third Sphere, to join one of our first co-living communities. And then I did the opposite. I was like, hey, I noticed you're a VC. We don't have room for you in the community, but can I have some money? That was awesome. The opposite. So, yeah, I think that is really amazing. And by the way, not normalized experience to all the founders listening. Just want to make that clear. Like,
no. I mean, we had so many people that said no when we were raising the pre-seed. I mean, it was just like, for founders that are listening to this, I mean, you know, Abe gave me great advice when I was first starting this. He was like, you're going to talk to 100 people and 99 of them are going to say no.
Yep.
But you only need one to say yes. It only takes one to say yes. And that's with every round, realistically. You never know why people are saying no. And it's usually not because you have a bad idea and it's not going to work.
Right. Yeah. I talk about this all the time. There's like 100 different reasons why they can't say yes. It's like fund dynamics or timing or competitor or partnership dynamics or
like they had a stomach ache that morning when they got your email and like didn't care. like, because they got 1,000 pitches that month, you know. Right. So you're not, no one cares as much about the meeting with the venture capitalist than you,
right?
Especially not the venture capitalist, unless your company is like one of these, you know, takeoff runaways, which luckily we kind of got into that bucket. But the movie The Social Network is probably the worst.
Oh my gosh.
Education for how it's like to raise money.
I talk about that all the time. The whole experience too, like that you're just coding and drinking tequila shots and like that it's all just this exciting time. Like really building a company is sitting around in your boxer shorts and like, what do I do next? Like
and not stopping.
Yeah.
It's just not stopping. Like you just need to not stop. At every moment in life of creating anything, the universe will give you a reason to stop and the reasons get better.
So yeah, I mean, I do want to like give you a round of applause on the headline. You guys ended up raising 5.8 from Freestyle and some others. You know, awesome result. We always do the round of applause because it's still hard. And so congratulations on that. The one question I always like to end on is a two-parter, which is what does the next 12 months look like and what does the next 10 years look like?
Great question. We held off on the press release for the seed round for about 8 months. So the next 12 months looks like probably raising our next round of capital. We've got a lot of, we're starting to meet investors who are really interested in starting a Series A. So we're starting to understand who might be a good fit for us and having some really interesting conversations with some really smart people in the Valley, which is really nice. We just brought on the my friend Aaron, who was the head of North American operations for Airbnb during the big growth years. He joined as COO. His first day was today. And he's going to help us go to market. So the next 12 months looks like us taking My Place out of beta and getting it out to the world so that multiple people in totally disparate different circles can share their houses with each other around the world. So this looks like going to alumni, you know, groups and interest groups and pet sitters and dog sitters and swappers and all the different interest groups around the world. And we found like a 1.5 million person like LGBTQ community that's sharing their houses with each other. So we're hoping to make their lives easier. We're throwing a couple drag shows in Fire Island. We're also throwing some cocktail parties at Stanford. So we're going across the world to like get all these different unique people sharing their houses with each other. And that's next 12 months.
Well, really, and the good news about that is they're already doing the behavior. So now you just give them the tools and the resources to like go back to enjoying it, right?
The people are figuring out how to share with each other.
Right.
And so we just spent the last 18 months working with like an extended network of my friends, figuring out who are already sharing with each other, to figure out what makes that easier. Because, you know, there's not much easier than posting on Facebook and like seeing who replies. But we found it. We figured it out. So that it's not easy. It's like, you know, for any founder out here, it's like you're not going to land where you started. You know, it's right. You're not going to get there. Even if it feels like it, it's little adjustments along the way. And then the next 10 years, I hope that through this effort, if we sell to like Booking Group for as like a unique home sharing platform, while that might be a great financial outcome, I see it as like just a big waste of my time. Like I'm not necessarily interested in home sharing. What I am interested in is connecting people in a non-geographic way or geographic proximity way, that so that they can share with each other around the world. So I think the most valuable thing people have to share is their home. And so hopefully home sharing is what can help us build a massive global network of all people sharing all the things that they want, their time, their house, their energy, their skills, their boats, their cars, their tools, whatever. I hope we create a network where people actually share real things with the people they trust around the world. And we can help people feel connected, because nothing helps you feel more connected to another person than sharing something.
Yeah.
So hopefully that we can help people feel more connected in a world where you might not know your neighbor, or you might feel overwhelmed and alone on the internet. Hopefully I can show you a map of all your friends and friends of friends around the world so you can share things with each other.
Like I said, Zach, I think the future is bright for you and for My Place. And I think that what you're doing is so important. And obviously, I mean, I grew up in shared housing with my students live with us. And so this is near and dear to my heart. And I got to meet people from all around the world. So obviously I'm extremely biased in saying this, but it makes you, it will make, I think, humanity more well-rounded to learn about the cultures around them. And so, like I said, the future is bright for you. Is there anything you want to leave the listeners or the audience with, a place that they can go, a call to action? What do you think is the most important?
I think a call to action now, if you want to get involved early, join the wait list and write us a great note so we can get you in as a beta tester. And if you want to bring your, if you want to bring your community on here to share with your friends, like join the beta and write us a great note, mention you heard me here, and we'd love to get you in to test out bringing your network on. That's the most profound thing that can help us right now, is unique networks that already exist that want to share with each other. I want to meet those people, because those are the people that are going to help us take this around the world. And we have interesting incentives to get involved and help us build.
Awesome.
This is not going to happen without that. So,
well, Zach, thanks again for joining us today, and take care.
John, thanks so much for having me. This was a pleasure.